spine
and sprocket.
The book to read is not the one that thinks for you, but the one which makes you think.
A classic is a book that has never finished saying what it has to say.
No two persons ever read the same book.
That is part of the beauty of all literature. You discover that your longings are universal longings, that you're not lonely and isolated from anyone. You belong.
Soldiers of the Red Army, and its Polish formations especially, were unlikely to feel any more merciful after what they had witnessed in the Polish capital. We saw the destruction of Warsaw when we entered its empty streets on that memorable day. In 1945, wrote Captain Klotchkov of the 3rd Shock Army, nothing was left but ruins and ashes covered by snow. Badly starved and exhausted residents were making their way home. Only 162,000 remained out of a pre-war population of 1,310,000. After the unbelievably brutal suppression of the Warsaw Uprising in October 1944, the Germans had systematically destroyed all the historic monuments of the city, even though none had been used by the rebels. Vasily Grossman made his way through the ruined city to the ghetto. All that remained were the 3.5-meter-high wall, topped with broken glass and barbed wire, and the Judenrat, the Jewish administrative building. The rest of the ghetto was a single undulating sea of broken bricks. Grossman wondered how many thousands of bodies were buried underneath. It was hard to imagine anyone escaping, but a Polish citizen led him to where 4 Jews had just emerged from their hiding place, high above the girders of a tall skeleton of a building.
And that was a section from the book The Fall of Berlin, 1945, by Anthony Beaver.
I think it's Antony.
Antony.
Antony. Isn't that that little kid who likes the ragu spaghetti sauce?
Yeah.
Antony!
That's right.
Do you remember that?
Yes, in Philadelphia. Wednesdays are Prince Spaghetti Days.
Prince Spaghetti Day, yeah.
He's just read the tone that was set by that wonderful audio clip read by our special performer.
Yeah.
And music performed by, I can't remember the name, and we posted on a website. And I'll get it in a second. Yeah. But what'd you think of that clip, Renee?
I really liked that opening.
Did you?
Yeah, I did. I haven't read the book, but it got me. So.
Did it?
Yeah.
Yeah. What was the death total numbers? Did anyone remember? Catch that?
Well, there was over 1 million and there was 160,000 left or something.
Is that what he said?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Utterly brutal.
1.3 million at the start.
Yeah, it really set the tone for the horror that is this book, I think, in a lot of ways, The Fall of Berlin. And then that little bit of hope, I guess, with the 4 Jewish survivors coming out of the girders in the tall building, you know.
Yeah, every single survivor mattered because there were so few.
Mm-hmm.
So this was not a happy book,
no.
I would say.
Uh-uh. No, not a happy book.
It started off not happy, and it got unhappier.
It got worse.
As we went along.
And then at the end, it was a little more unhappy.
Yeah.
Except that...
You enjoyed it.
The Americans win. Everybody loves a winner.
Yeah.
I think the Russians won, didn't they?
The Russians won.
The Soviets, I should
say.
Well, this was an interesting book because it's called The Fall of Berlin, 1945, and yet it was almost exclusively the story of the Russians' assault on Berlin. Very little to do with the Americans.
Correct. Correct. Yeah. Because we did not get to Berlin.
Right.
But we got...
to the Elbe.
We didn't get there.
It doesn't say Fall of the Elbe River.
Okay. We got really close, though.
We did. Didn't we hold up our troops on purpose?
I got that impression, yeah.
I thought that's why I was...
Yeah.
That we let the Russians take that.
As part of some... deal? It was.
I think it was a deal.
Churchill didn't like
wasn't
it.
There?
Oh yeah, and he Churchill no, that's
didn't
right.
go along with it at all.
Yeah, but the Americans were okay with it, and the Soviets, and that's what the book pointed out, kept pushing faster and faster and harder, because they kept not trusting.
Oh yeah, yeah.
That the Americans would keep their word or wouldn't want it for themselves.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think, you know, I call him Ike. He lets me call him Ike. I'm thinking, I'm speaking of Dwight Eisenhower, who lets me call him Ike, because we're close. Didn't realize the importance. I think the Americans made a mistake in undervaluing the importance Berlin? Of Berlin.
Well, Eisenhower comes off as naive in this book.
A little bit, yes, he does in this book. Like, and that's what I'm speaking about, it's presented in this book.
Like, I don't care about what happens after the war, I'm here to win the war. Yeah. Well, Stalin certainly cared about what happened after the war, and so did Churchill, but it seems like the Americans just didn't. I mean, in this book anyway, and it's like the Anthony Beaver's a Brit, so.
He's right. A fairly well-renowned author, well-respected in the field.
And he speaks about the Americans like their main concern was preservation of life.
Forces. And I think that was true.
And the Russians, and that probably was true to an extent, but I'm not sure we get a balanced view on both sides.
From the side.
We get an almost completely brutal version of the Russian side. And not much of a view from the American side other than that.
Correct. Yeah, it was kind of again, I think that's because we didn't get to Berlin.
Yeah.
So.
So I think I've already picked our next book.
Or British or Canadian.
Oh, you got the next one?
Sword of Shannara.
The Last Battle.
The Last Battle by Cornelius Ryan, which is about the fall of Berlin. Because let's read another happy book.
It is the Berlin thing?
Yeah.
And he's American author The Longest Day.
I'm not sure he's American. Is he? He looks British in the picture, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Cornelius.
Kind of that stuck up.
Wait, isn't it Cornelius an ape name for apes? Yes. Cornelius and Zira?
He was born in Dublin. See? Mm. He's got that kind of...
Yeah.
Stranger in a strange land look. No, or Portrait of the Artist. Sort of that James Joyce look to him. Anyway, we digress. That's what we should call this podcast.
We digress.
We digress. Yeah. It's not too late.
It can be the subtitle.
Yeah. Okay.
It is too late because I already made the audio logo
and
have put it into the shows that are completely edited.
Okay.
But we will add it on.
Yes, we will.
And it'll be in the title page when you make it.
Okay. So this book takes place pretty much the first half of 1945. And as we mentioned, it's the perspective of from the Russians and the Germans and their... That whole thing, the whole opening, the whole first half of the book, I thought was hard to read.
Yeah.
Not as hard as the later half.
Yeah, I thought it was harder.
Yeah.
You did?
Why? Yes. Well, the later half gets into the politics and the military maneuvers and all that, but the first half talks about the tortures and the rapes and...
Yes.
That's hard to read.
Yeah, you are correct. I guess I thought it was kind of going the whole way through because the brutality and yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, the brutality is sort of constant, yes, but I think I agree with Jeff, yeah. Some of the torture stuff I can't read.
Yeah, well, it wasn't really torture stuff, right?
Well, there was some torture stuff.
Yeah. It was torturous to read it.
How come I liked it so much that I read it twice?
Yeah, I don't know.
This is like when I watched the film Blue Velvet multiple times.
Multiple times.
And my friend Rick was appalled. He said, Dave, it's a great film, but I would never want to see it again. I was like, oh, it was so cool. And I really thought this book was just so cool. The SS hanging people, German old men. It's insane. Now the rape part didn't get to me. A lot of it was did get to me. But so it opens with the Russian forces closing in on a bunch of names I didn't know, Pomerania or you know there. But he put maps in here that helped.
Yeah,
a lot.
The maps were good.
Version I read didn't have maps.
You teach World War II, right?
Correct.
And you don't run into when we teach it. terms like Baldenburg, Neustettin, Lundberg.
Yeah, I'm sure you don't get into the detail.
Pomerania.
No. Yeah,
all these regions of Germany, Hanover, that I didn't really know where they were. But the maps helped.
Those are Silesia, regions of Poland now, by the way.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Dr. Einstein. Can we not have him on the show anymore, Jeff? Yeah.
He makes us look bad, which isn't that hard, really, but it's still annoying.
Yeah, East Prussia, you're right. That would be Königsberg. That sounds really cool. That's by Latvia. Yeah, so those terms could be confusing to me, the reader.
Yes.
You know, but at least he had the map. I could flip back to the first map and go, yeah. Oh, okay, I see the Soviet Third Belarusian Front. Or do you say Belarusian?
I don't say it at all. I just read it and then move on.
How do you teach? Do you teach the Eastern Front in? You guys teach junior high or high school or
eighth grade?
Oh, eighth grade. Okay.
Yeah. So middle school, but yeah, we teach the Eastern Front.
Okay.
But not to. I don't go as extensive as.
Yeah.
We just don't have time. But
no, like the maps, they have which battles on them.
Right. Usually I think we talk a little bit about movement.
Yeah, coming the pushing back ultimately toward Berlin. Big arrows, yeah.
Yeah.
One map has big arrows going
right, exactly. Across. They got here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Across east, right. To west, to Germany. Stalingrad, Leningrad, Moscow are on that one map.
Yes.
So I talk about all three of those, but I have a more extensive battle background than you do, right? Which,
yeah,
doesn't mean I'm a better teacher by any means.
No, but you know the...
Because those aren't always the essential questions or on the park tests, everybody, right? The battles. They always want the boring stuff, the political stuff.
What's the park test? It's a standardized test?
That's the new ISAT test.
Which stands for panic and... What does the P stand for? And career park...
Readiness, right?
College and career readiness. The Q's not a quiz.
You're going to have to edit in that we know what this means.
Yeah,
we
I was just
really
thinking that.
Sound very good right now.
I hope nobody from the Board of Education is listening. It's like, who are these clowns?
But see.
Yeah. Why and he was so close to tenure.
That's why you have acronyms. So you don't have to remember the big long titles of things. Yeah, college and career readiness coming out of the Obama. What's that new Arnie
Duncan?
Yeah, director of education that takes control. Criticisms takes control from local school districts. That's one way to look at it. Big government overreach, right? Part of the New Deal.
Mm-hmm. Wow. But we digress.
But we digress. Yeah. Sorry, I asked that.
Yeah.
This is it for me, right?
Ixnay.
Well, if the book is too gross to go into, we'll just have a lot of digression. And other way of looking at it is to unify content and curriculum across the United States. Mm. Because with local control of school boards, right? You got 100 different school boards, you got 100 different standards.
He's still on this, isn't he?
And
and I thought I had redirected him back.
As Renee can tell you, the kids in the backwater parts of Kentucky are getting a better quality content than what we provide them in our school.
That's pretty true.
Okay.
Good point.
Or in Texas. Oh, no, that would get too political. They learn one version of history. And in the northern liberal cities, you learn another version of history. So if you have a park testing, you have a standardized curriculum.
Palatine's not liberal, though. Did you say northern liberal?
Compared to some places.
Well, okay, all right, all right. We're pretty far from the Eastern Front, all
we are.
It's a show about things all around the world. So they're moving through these outer regions, right?
Yes. And the Russians were very well equipped for this. I remember there was a passage I read where the Germans were estimating what they thought the Russian attack forces were. This was very early on, January. And it was talking about Gudurian. General Guderian.
Guderian.
Yeah. His department estimated that the enemy had a superiority of 11 to 1 in infantry, 7 to 1 in tanks, and 20 to 1 in artillery, and also aviation.
And was he underestimating? Yeah,
probably, because...
Probably.
And then still, in the end of April, you know, Hitler's still talking about...
Yeah.
I mean, just
we're
insane.
We're gonna crush just them.
That's why it's crazy.
Yeah.
It's just a crazy book. It's... The whole event was insane.
Yeah.
So yeah, the chapter, you know, House of Cards on the Vistula, or do you say?
Yeah.
Charge to the Oder as the Oder, not the Oder that I brought with me tonight.
Yeah.
But the Pomerania and the Oder bridgeheads, so it's covering all the military advances. And what was shocking about that, right, was that the German leadership, do you think they're telling their people to flee ahead of the oncoming enemy?
No. That was amazing, yeah.
No. They're saying, stay, you're safe. And then the horrible things begin.
Part of that was orders they were given to tell everybody to stay, and part of it was they were just protecting their own rear ends.
Yeah.
They wanted to get out. But no, they couldn't if everybody started fleeing and causing all that panic.
Right.
And that makes it even worse.
But what I didn't really get a sense of is how did these people get there? Had the Germans invaded Russia and German citizens just kind of moved in right behind them?
No, I think
who was
that
it they
was
were telling to
that was
flee?
Part of Germany. I mean,
yeah, they were on the outer edges of Germany.
And part of it was occupied, but Germany extended a lot further east than it does now.
Okay. Now I understand.
And there's
you should have said that.
This great part where it goes back to what we had on the last episode or the next episode of Stalingrad. Let me read this to you. Von Paulus and Strecker. Who was Strecker?
I don't know.
No, we don't know.
Yeah, I don't remember.
They're in prison by the Soviets. And the Soviets are recording what they're saying. All Hitler thinks about, said Paulus, is how to force the German people into new sacrifices. Never before in history has lying been such a powerful weapon in diplomacy and policy. We Germans have been cunningly deceived by a man who usurped power. And then Strecker replies, why has God become so angry with Germany that he sent us Hitler? Are the German people so ignoble? Have they deserved such a punishment? It's 2 years since the Stalingrad catastrophe, said Paulus, and now the whole of Germany is becoming a gigantic Stalingrad.
Yeah.
That really struck me.
Yeah.
Just to hear these two generals, what did we do to deserve this? Like, seriously, you know?
Yeah, it must have been really just shocking. That's what always amazes me, is how traumatic it must have been for some of these German generals and leaders who really thought they had been flying high for a few years and really thought they were going to take over the world and then have it all come crashing down. And everything that they dealt out on the Russians got dealt back to them and worse.
Yeah.
Though we never really heard about how the Germans treated the Russians when they invaded Russia, but we hear so much through this book. It's just ad nauseum how brutal the Russians were to the German people and everybody in their path, really, as they came through.
The destructive urge of Soviet soldiers in East Prussia was truly alarming. It went far beyond the chopping up of furniture to make a fire. Without thinking, they torched houses which could have given them warmth and shelter for the night when all was frozen hard outside. They were also furious to find a standard of living among peasant farmers far higher than anything that they had ever imagined. This provoked outrage at the idea that Germans, who had already been living so well, should have invaded the Soviet Union to loot and destroy. The Soviet authorities, no doubt to save Stalin from blame for the disaster of 1941, had managed to inculcate a sense of collective guilt in the Soviet people that they had allowed the motherland to be invaded. There can be little doubt that the expiation of suppressed guilt increased the violence of revenge, but many motives for violence were much more straightforward. Dmitry Shegalov, a political officer in the Third Army, admitted that on seeing German larders, they were disgusted by the plenty, which they had found everywhere. They also hated the orderly arrangement of German domestic life. "I just love to smash my fist into all those neat rows of tins and bottles," he wrote. Red Army soldiers were astonished to see wirelesses in so many houses. The evidence of their eyes strongly implied that the Soviet Union was perhaps not quite the workers' and peasants' paradise they had been told. East Prussian farms produced a mixture of bewilderment, jealousy, admiration, and anger which alarmed political officers. The fears of army political departments were confirmed by reports from NKVD postal censors, who underlined negative comments in blue and positive comments in red. The NKVD drastically increased the censorship of letters home, hoping to avoid the way soldiers described the style of living of ordinary Germans and the politically incorrect conclusions formed as a result. The NKVD was also horrified to find that soldiers were sending German postcards home. Some even had anti-Soviet quotations from Hitler's speeches.
Oops, there's a mistake.
Yeah.
Anti-Hitler quotations. Anti-Soviet quotations.
They'll shoot you for that.
So there's a lot there, Jeff. What were you thinking about that reading?
Well, I was just... This is why I continued to read the book, because there were many portions of the book where I thought, I can't read this. When it got into a lot of the details about which armies were moving to what positions and taking what town and on which side of the river and linking up with what other armies and all of that stuff, I'd really get lost in that because it's not really interesting to me. But it's stuff like this where we're learning about what the soldiers were thinking. And I thought this was particularly powerful because the Russians, you know, they were a bunch of, the soldiers at that time were kind of a bunch of, what's the word I'm looking for?
People like me.
Bozos.
Not people bozos. Like me.
Yeah, hobos. No, not hobos. But, you know, sort of ignorant bumpkins, country bumpkins.
Yeah.
So they really didn't know what the rest of the world was like. And this was so shocking for them to come into Germany and see how nice it was and thinking, why did they invade us? Why were they making war? It's nice here in Germany.
Yeah, it's funny. And we both picked that same clip.
Yeah.
I had independently recorded that and Jeff had already highlighted it to read. So, right, Renee, in the Soviet Union, wasn't there a lot of censorship of outside world things? So.
That's my understanding, that yes, they wouldn't be as aware of what was going on in Europe, yeah.
Yeah.
The rest of Europe.
To make the Soviet Union appear better.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. And then the NKVD, what were those?
It was like the Russian secret police.
Yeah.
But they were fighting units.
Precursor to KGB, right?
Yeah.
But they were also fighting units and stuff. And
I got they like embedded political units?
No, they were whole troopers because...
They were the blockers shooting the guys retreating?
No, no. In the game we play, the NKVD are elite 628 troops, which means nothing to listeners. But they're actually...
They're kind of like SS.
Counters to use. Like, yeah, they're more like the SS. So there were whole units of NKVD.
Oh, okay.
That were sent into battle. So, like, okay. Break out your Valor of the Guards game. And
okay.
They actually got the NKVD.
Yeah, I don't have that.
It's, oh, yeah, okay. That's where I learned that. So as I was reading it, right, I was looking for it, and I think Renee is a specialist on some of these terms. That's why she's here tonight.
Sure.
Yeah.
This is great.
I was noticed the structure of the book. I had a hard time the first half of the book, maybe the first third. Then I really got into it. Maybe I understood his structure more or his writing got better. But at the beginning, to me, it just seemed like it was a lot of research that he had done where he had taken snippets of facts and linked them together with some verbiage. And it just seemed disjointed. And really really didn't draw me in. But boy, by about halfway through the book, I was chugging along, and I really found it hard to put down. It was horribly fascinating.
Yeah,
so I don't know if his writing is always like that. I haven't read any of his stuff
before. Mike had read his book, other book?
Stalingrad.
Okay.
He has a good Stalingrad book.
Was it similar? Or?
Yeah, it's thick and well-researched, and that's what he does, yeah.
Yeah. Renee, what were the NKVD? Do you remember?
If I recall, they were the public police force, which include like the traffic police, firefighting, border guards, I think.
Crossing guards?
Right, exactly.
Wow.
Yep. They were the ones that conducted the mass executions.
Oh, much like the SS for the Germans.
Right, in the forced labor camps.
And school crossing guards.
The deportation of the Kulaks.
Kulaks, yeah.
No, the K, the Kulaks.
Oh,
K-U,
is that what? That's a tribal group in Russia, right? Kulaks.
Oh, yeah.
They did all that. So they had to be a whole unit of fighting men to carry out these kind of activities.
Right.
And then they were recorded or brought in. What does that NKVD mean?
People's commissariat?
Yeah,
their internal affairs.
Oh, okay. So they were like watching other people in the army. Yeah. So they were brought in to fight battles and keep paying little notes on everybody else that wasn't really loyal, right? So they're a lot like the SS, right? In some sense.
But I thought it was interesting. They were preaching revenge the whole time. Right from the top, right from Stalin down, military leader, political leader, all the embedded political officers preached revenge, revenge, revenge. I think the one sign in the barracks was posted on the bulletin board, did you kill a German today?
Yeah.
You
know, oh, right. Yeah, yeah.
Not did you kill an SS officer or not did you kill a soldier. Any German. Kill any German. It's fine.
Right.
You know, so that whole revenge theme. And then all of a sudden, Stalin realized that there was going to be a post-war world and we really couldn't kill all the Germans. And they changed the tune in like April, but the train had already left. I mean, every soldier got the revenge message.
Yeah. Yes, and we heard all about that.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of revenge, yeah.
Yeah.
So then the book keeps tracking the troops as they start to close in on the city of Berlin, right? And the one thing I really liked about it was the stuff about, you know, you could slowly see Hitler, right, losing it.
Yes.
Just crazy. That portrait of him was just insane.
Well,
and the only thing I don't understand also is why somebody didn't take him out. It seems like...
Well, you had the Stauffenberg murder attempt.
Right.
With the bomb under the table.
But when he's in this chancery for months, right? I mean...
Yeah.
He was in months.
Wow, why didn't somebody just shoot him? I don't get it.
Yeah, there's still, because a couple of them there, the book was saying, were still very idol worshipping of Hitler, and it was Himmler.
And Goebbels.
Goebbels and Goering.
Yep.
Too still. Whereas the others were starting to really see the light and know that this was insanity. And so there is this little bit in there where Hitler and one of the other guys gets into it.
To assemble enough troops, more of the divisions trapped uselessly in Courland and elsewhere needed to be brought back by sea, and the offensive in Hungary needed to be postponed. Hitler refused yet again. You must believe me, Guderian persisted, when I say it is not just pigheadedness on my part that makes me keep on proposing the evacuation of Courland. I can see no other way left to us of accumulating reserves, and without reserves, we cannot hope to defend the capital. I assure you I am acting solely in Germany's interests. Hitler began trembling in anger as he jumped to his feet. How dare you speak to me like that, he shouted. Don't you think I'm fighting for Germany? My whole life has been one long struggle for Germany. Colonel de Mazière, the new operations officer at Zossen, had never seen such a row and stood there shocked and afraid for the chief of staff. To bring an end to Hitler's frenzy, Goering led Guderian out of the room to find some coffee while everyone calmed down.
Renee, what do you think?
Wow. Yeah. That does sound like who's kind of keeping him up, Hitler up, you know?
Yeah, the other guys in the background.
Yeah, let's pull him away.
So this doesn't go... So Hitler doesn't execute another good officer?
Yeah.
Yeah.
By this time, he's on drugs?
Yeah.
Yep. He is.
Yes.
by this time, the Stauffenberg assassination, that movie...
Valkyrie.
It happened. His arm is damaged. He's got to hold it to stop from shaking uncontrollably. It's just starting to proceed downhill.
Yeah, we've got this whole... You really get the feeling of the whole gradual eroding of the thing, because Hitler's going crazy. Generals, one by one, are pushing back on orders that they're given. They're obviously losing territory to the Russians. There's a gigantic Russian force coming against them, and yet the Germans, even though German generals are pushing back against Hitler, they're still fighting. There's still men fighting like crazy. The Germans fought like crazy.
But I think, said the reason, I remember that scene where the guy said he was in Germany, or he was in Berlin saying, we have to keep fighting. We can't let the Russians in, because he knew what the Germans had did to the Russians.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's what they were afraid of.
They were so brutal, like the opening clip in Poland, and obviously the death squads coming through Russia. And Hitler had that whole master race thing, right? And Slavs, whatever Slavs that were, you know, mm-hmm. Yugoslavians. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the Russians were Slavic, right?
Yes.
I don't fully understand, like, his tribal history of Slavs, but they were low on that totem pole of master race.
Oh yeah, they weren't subhumans.
Yeah, it wasn't just a Jewish thing.
Right,
you know?
Yeah. So that brutal and in the films, the censor, aren't you using those at school, Renee? The one guy says the Russian offensive was too tempting for Hitler. It had the oil fields he needed for the war. It had the Lebensraum, the food, the open spaces, and it had, with Poland and Russia, it had the largest concentration of Jews mm-hmm. in Europe. Too tempting for him to pass up for all those reasons. Pretty sad. And then this part of the book I didn't get to put to music, which is by Purple Planet, royalty-free music. Purple Planet, and that's that Hitler, oblivious to reality, began to talk about Army Detachment Steiner was an inflation which was grandiose even by his own standards. He argued that it could be in any case reinforced with all the units from CI Corps. Is that what's a CI Corps?
C. 100.
C, Senor?
No, isn't it Roman numerals?
Could be.
101st.
Is that what the C and the I mean?
Oh, I don't know.
That makes sense.
I thought it was 101st.
I only know up through X.
Okay. Super Bowl.
Okay.
Super Bowl L is coming up. So
okay.
I have to
memorize this. Okay. L is 50.
Yeah.
Yeah. C is 100.
C is 100.
M is 1,000.
M is okay. That's easy. Renee, quiz me every day at work from now on. Okay. Quiz me every day. Dave,
not
what's
a
C?
Yep.
Okay. See me in the hallway.
Cards.
Dave.
C. Think of cents. Centa.
Centurions.
Centurions.
The 100.
The 100, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, there you go.
All right. Yeah. I know my Latin. Yep. L was for Liberia. Wait, that's not Latin. No. 101, because the I is 101st Corps, which had retreated north of Berlin. He even thought of Goering's Luftwaffe battalion, bodyguard, at Carenhall, but they had already departed. Every soldier, sailor, and airman who could be scraped together would be thrown into battle, and any army commander who held back his men faced execution within 5 hours. Hitler had always taken as gospel the remark of Frederick the Great, whoever throws his last battalion into the struggle will be the winner. Except for that to work, the other guys kind of had to already throw
thrown their last one in. Yeah.
Slip, right? Yeah. His last one in.
They didn't say, but with some exceptions. There are exceptions to this rule.
It bolstered his fantasy that reckless gambling with the lives of others was the mark of greatness.
Yeah.
That says a lot, doesn't
it? Yeah, yeah.
Steiner, when he received a call from the Führer bunker, was dumbfounded by Hitler's order to attack. After collecting his thoughts, he rang Krebs back to remind him of the true situation. Krebs was standing almost next to Hitler, and then it was too late. Steiner received an official order to launch a counterattack against the right flank of the 1st Belarusian Front. He and his officers also threatened with execution if they failed to obey. So,
Hitler kept coming up with stuff like, have them send all their tanks. They've got 10,000 tanks. And actually, they had like 5 tanks and a donkey cart.
Yeah, yeah.
And a dog. He just was completely...
One German Shepherd, and, too.
Yes, with big teeth. But he was obviously so... Just crazy. Fantasizing about all these things and paying no attention to the fact that it wasn't just soldiers now that were engaged in this thing. It was German citizens that were being... Yeah.
Totally brutalized.
Totally brutalized, yes.
And Hitler, during the course of that night of madness, also sacked General Raymond as commander for the defense of Berlin. General Bergdorf convinced Hitler that he was no good, and Goebbels had taken against him ever since he refused to move his headquarters into the Zoo bunker along his own side of his own bunker. And then he puts Himmler in place, which this author is saying was a really horrible decision.
Yeah.
Himmler in charge of, what was it, the defense or...
Yeah, he some wasn't Himmler thing. Like political officer, and then all of a sudden he's in charge of the army.
That started army with the SS, and then like the army at the end. Like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, wow. It doesn't work. Yeah, the Russian government wanted to have the book suppressed.
The information on
because of it was so it makes the Russians obviously look so bad.
This book, you mean?
Yeah.
Oh, the I thought you meant just statistics on the amount of rapes that were happening by the Russians.
Well, they dispute that, of course, but.
Oh, okay. Yeah. My first encounter with this quantity of rapes really was in our film at school, Renee, The Century. Do you skip that part?
I do actually skip that part.
I skip it. They describe a German woman taking 20 men on her and stuff like that. And so we skip that with the kids. Not that they're kids today are pretty sophisticated, though. I mean, they talk about a lot
just
of things.
A little too,
it's too brutal.
Too brutal.
I do a quick fast forward and just say, hey, the Russians were pretty brutal. And that was really the first win I even got of it, having studied the war for so long. And this book, just totally blew that. You want to know the quantities?
Yeah.
Oh, it's worse than we're telling you, folks. It's worse than we're telling you.
Yeah.
So, Jeff, thanks for sticking with the book, at least. And
But I think when you think about what the Germans did to those soldiers, you know, sisters and wives and mothers, you know, murder, enslavement, medical experiments. I mean, you know, not to justify any of it, but it's like...
It comes home to roost.
Yes, right? Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And Beaver kind of, he takes a couple of paragraphs and talks about the whole thing of rape in war. About
I was not
soldiers taking off and plundering and raping.
Yeah.
And I thought it seemed really out of place.
What it was, Renee, was, you know, people say that crime is a hate crime, not a, you know, sex crime. He was disputing that. He was saying the Russians were treating it as a spoils of war crime, therefore not really a crime, but I deserve this because I worked so hard to get this. Mm. And the revenge thing. And that's exactly what you're talking about, right, Jeff? That whole page, 2 pages?
Yeah, it was about the page.
I didn't make a note. I meant to make a note and bring that up, too. It didn't sit well with me.
No, it's the only part where he kind of steps back and makes and tries to do some explanation around it. He doesn't make any moral judgments really about it, other than the fact that he brings it up in such a light that it, you might think he's making a moral judgment, almost like making an excuse for it.
Yeah, and I think he was really disputing the idea that it's always a hate thing. Like, I hate women, so I'll do this.
Right.
Mm. It's a topic for sociologists and another day. But you're right, Jeff, that struck me as not quite fitting.
Yeah.
I think you clarified why. Yeah. On the other show, Renee, you had mentioned about the Wehrmacht versus the SS. Can you explain that to the listeners a little bit? And then I have a clip from the book.
That, just the difference in what the German...
Wehrmacht
army would be versus the Nazi soldiers and the motivation between the two. Whereas I would say that the German army... was there to protect the land and that sense of Germany and that pride of Germany versus that call from Hitler as much.
Whereas the SS pledged loyalty to
Hitler and his goals.
Right, and so the SS also getting better equipment, better training, more loyal in the end. Hitler doesn't even trust the regular army as much.
And that's where the breakdown's starting to come too.
Yeah, and you'll hear
why are we here?
Yeah, you'll hear that here.
Officers of the general staff were all too aware of the anti-army atmosphere when they visited the Reich's chancellery bunker each day. Guderian's arrival in his large staff Mercedes was greeted by SS sentries presenting arms. But once inside, he and his aides had to offer up their briefcases to be searched. Their pistols were taken from them, and they had to stand while SS guards examined the line of their uniform with a practiced eye, searching for suspicious bulges. Army officers also had to remind themselves before entering the Reich Chancellery that saluting in the traditional manner had now been banned. All members of the Wehrmacht had to use the German greeting, as the Nazi salute was known. Many found themselves raising their hand to their cap and suddenly having to shoot the whole arm outward. Friedrich von Lorenhoven, for example, was not in the most comfortable of positions in such surroundings. His predecessor had been hanged as part of the July plot, and his cousin, Colonel Baron Freytag von Lorenhoven, another conspirator, had committed suicide.
Why did you pick this section?
So that illustrates what Renee was talking about, that conflict in the SS versus the Army.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what was the July plot again? That was the Stauffenberg?
Yeah, that was the Stauffenberg, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So German generals showing up to meet with the leader being searched by these...
I guess that's why nobody took him out.
These goons.
The SS that might still have there point, protecting, yeah. protecting yeah. him.
There's we certainly get a lot of sense of the chaos that goes on in war. And the scale of the chaos that goes on in this book is astounding, from the battles that occur,
mm-hmm.
people going crazy, from the refugees trying to get out of town or trying to hide somewhere, and what happens to them, and the way the army treats the refugees. You know, you'd think the army would be helping protect the refugees, but in some cases the army just thought the refugees were in the way because it kept them from keeping their troops moving forward and backward. Yep. Then you've got Hitler dishing out these crazy orders, generals pushing back, rearrangement always going on in the hierarchy of things and who's in charge. And, I mean, it's just...
Yeah, it's just
and,
chaos.
And then people in the middle of Berlin trying to go on with their daily lives, like up until a couple of days before the Russians even got there, they're going to the store like it's any other day, they're going to the theater... and just trying to live lives like it's normal. And then that whole thing falling apart in the chaos that ensues. I mean, it's just like a nightmare. He does the writing really well, because there are many scenes in here where it's really like a nightmare. You think it's hell.
Yeah.
Because there's burning, people dying, fleeing, flying all over the place. I mean, it's horrible.
And even amongst the Russian troops... You had, right, he was talking about Zhukov's army, another army group, Zhukov, was it?
Yeah. And,
kind of racing along.
Konev.
And Konev crossing each other's path and firing on each other. And the NKVD, as Renee was pointing out, were also killing Russian soldiers for various reasons, right? Yep. And they kept, they did point out that the Russian officers were not looting and doing these horrible things as much as when the second line guys got there. So the first wave might come through and be fairly kind, and then this next wave would come in and all hell would break loose.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You were never safe. You didn't know if you were safe. Even Russian prisoners who were freed from German camps who thought, oh my gosh, hey, we're free. Hey, Russians, fellow Russians, thanks. So what would happen to them is either they would be shifted to the back and then put in Russian prisons, or they'd be handed guns and said, you know, you're free here, it's time to fight the Germans, or they'd just be summarily shot and
for surrendering, like Zhukov's own or Stalin's own son, wasn't he captured and executed eventually
by the Germans.
But Stalin was pretty heartless. Stalin had a chance to exchange his son for a prisoner.
Yeah,
right, that is what it is. Yeah. I knew there was a story behind that.
And
with
said
Stalin
no.
saying no, he's not going to take his son. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, he's, shouldn't have been caught.
Right.
And as Jeff's pointing out, all this chaos, what's also crazy is Eva Braun, now maybe bride of Hitler by this time, or this clip might be from a little before that, but in the midst of all this chaos we're just talking about, here's Eva Braun, and her, she's saying things like this in her diary.
Her furniture had been moved into a room next to Hitler's in the Reichschancellery underworld on the 15th of April, and from then on she slept down there too. She was always immaculately turned out, wrote Hitler's Luftwaffe aide, Nicholas von Below. She was charming and obliging, and she showed no weakness right up to the last moment. The threat of being caught alive by Russian soldiers prompted her and Hitler's secretaries into pistol practice in the ruined courtyard of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. They were proud of their prowess and challenged officers in the bunker to a competition. "We can already hear the gunfire from the front," Eva Braun wrote to Hertha Ostermeyer. "My whole life is spent in the bunker. As you can imagine, we are terribly short of sleep. But I'm so happy, especially at this moment, at being near him. Yesterday I telephoned Gretel, probably for the last time. From today on, there's no way of getting through. But I have an unshakable faith that all will turn out well, and he is unusually full of hope."
Just crazy stuff. Yeah.
I don't know what she was on, but that must right. be wow. good stuff.
Yeah, wow.
Painkillers, I don't know what.
I never, no one talked about that ever. Yeah. I've never heard that. Yeah. I think this chick is really just like, what did you call her? Starry eye? What did you say?
Oh, yeah, the star, like just looking at with stars in his eyes.
Yeah.
Like, look at it. Yeah.
She's Hitler. Just maybe so yeah. in love.
And just can't see anything else.
And he is full of hope.
Yeah. yeah.
Well, wow. I guess you're not seeing the one that's yelling no. at the generals and doing all the other stuff. Isn't that in yeah, the midst of crazy. All this, right?
Yeah. yeah.
You have this little group. And then in this bunker, of course, anytime there's this war, and it's also in the film we show at school, the woman says, American girls, because mostly from American viewpoint when we teach, you know, because this is America, folks. We learn American history. And the woman says, the girls in the 40s were a little more precocious sexually because of their boyfriends going off. And, you know, mm-hmm. things get a little loosey-goosey when there's this threat of death or mm-hmm. the normal life boundaries are gone or are expanded. And in the film, they talk about Sinatra comes on the scene and they're all screaming, "We love Frank Sinatra." But yeah, in this bunker, right? While Hitler's doing all this, like, there's this whole group that are kind of breaking out the champagne
yeah.
and taking off yeah. the clothes.
Crazy. Yeah.
And,
you
know,
yeah. yeah.
Well, before the Russians get in, what the heck, boys and girls?
Yeah.
Right.
You know, just, yeah, nutty.
And we didn't really talk about it, but as the Germans were running out of troops, which they were very mm-hmm. quickly, Hitler activated the Hitler Youth. And
yes.
put them into action, yeah. which there was a lot of scenes of that throughout the book. And it says, here's one little passage, says, "The Führer's response to the onrush of Soviet tank brigades toward Berlin had been to order the establishment of a Panzerjagd division. But in typical Nazi style, this impressive-sounding organization for destroying tanks failed to live up to its title. It consisted of bicycle companies, mainly from Hitler Youth. Each bicyclist was to carry two Panzerfaust anti-tank launchers clamped upright either side of the front wheel and attached to the handlebars. The bicyclist was supposed to be able to dismount in a moment and be ready for action against a T-34 or Stalin tank. Even the Japanese did not expect their kamikazes to ride into battle on a bicycle."
See,
Hitler did.
When I was a kid... they made us put the little, like, baseball cards in the spokes.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. We didn't have to have a Panzerfaust stuck to the side.
Yeah. yeah.
No. But you don't want to do that because the T-34s will hear you coming.
That's true. Yeah. That's true.
Here come those Hitler youths. Yeah. Ja, da. Listen, comrade.
Yeah.
Here come the Hitler youth. Sorry, Jeff. I really like that image
yeah.
created in my head.
I mean, it's not... It can't be very scary for guys in a tank to see a kid running, riding up on a bicycle.
Well, no,
he's
yeah,
got Panzerfaust, though.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, well, Panzerfaust. I don't know if you know those things. In the games we play, you want one of those.
Yeah, you want one.
Because if you hit a tank with that puppy, it's like twice as good as a bazooka.
Yeah.
You're knocking that tank out, yeah. man. Yeah. It's the best anti-tank weapon of the war, is fair to say, right? The
yeah. German,
yeah.
Gosh, the Germans they seem to have so many of them at the end.
It's a one-shot little weapon, yeah. you know?
Yeah. Stockpile yeah. them or something.
Give them to the kid. He, like, just picks, aims it and pulls a little trigger.
Yeah.
Man, that thing can blow through the armor. It had a shaped charge weapon in
it
the
did,
front
yeah.
that could burn through armor and then spew into the inside. Is that?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know about that.
Its only drawback was you couldn't shoot it from a rooftop, from higher elevation.
Yeah, the
elevations.
Shell would fall out of yeah. the.
Oh, really?
No, so that, needed, was the, no that was the Piat by the British.
But still, Anthony mentions in here that they didn't work well from higher elevations.
Oh, yeah, I think he did.
Okay.
Yeah.
For
yeah.
whatever reason. I don't remember what.
Yeah. And then you get to the whole end times, right? I guess in the bunker, the fall. It covers in detail, mm-hmm. you know, because, right, what do your students ever tell you that Hitler's alive now and living in Brazil or something?
Oh, yeah, that comes up every year.
Well, I didn't know until I read this book.
Is he really?
The Soviets found his body like 2 days after he was.
Yeah.
I didn't know until I read this book.
Yes, me neither. And that information should really be out there in the morning.
Yeah.
This all came from they opened the archives after the fall of the
yeah,
Soviet Union.
Yeah, right, yeah.
So we finally discover that Hitler's remains were found, that Hitler deliberately did not want to get the information out. He even kept it from Zhukov, his general.
Who was Stalin. Stalin didn't want
Stalin,
to get the
information. Yeah. Stalin kept it from Zhukov, his general. Didn't want the word out that we got the body.
Well, he wanted to play it as the Western Allies were holding Hitler and using him and against
the
Soviets.
Escape.
And, yeah.
Yeah, this guy. Again, as Jeff said, into all this insanity, you got this other guy, Stalin, who's
yeah. totally
nuts.
Yeah.
Right.
Just some false information, not trusting allies. Oh, my goodness.
Well, I think I've said it before, but if the most evil person in the 20th century was Hitler, 1A was Stalin.
Yeah, and actually the biggest killer murderer was Mao Zedong. Our genocide?
Okay.
Yes.
Oh, really? As far as numbers?
As far as numbers, yeah.
Really?
For sure.
Okay.
Do you remember the order at all? Or
no.
Top people? So it was Mao, and then I think Stalin.
Stalin.
And
then. And then
no, some other guy.
It was another guy.
Pol Pot?
Or it may have been Pol Pot
really?
In between.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Beat
Cambodia
Hitler.
Or?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Beat
wow.
Hitler. Yeah.
Scary stuff.
It's time
yeah.
to stop demonizing Adolf, everybody, please.
He's only like number four.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
He tried.
Those attempting to get out had to be careful, because Goebbels had declared that leaving Berlin without permission was tantamount to desertion. First of all, they needed a travel permit, which could be obtained only with some story of essential work outside the capital. Many of those who really did have an official trip to make away from Berlin received murmured advice from envious colleagues, "Don't come back. Stay there." Almost everyone dreamed of seeking sanctuary in a quiet corner of the countryside where farms still had food. Some even investigated the possibility of purchasing false passports, and foreign diplomats suddenly found themselves extremely popular. Members of ministries were fortunate. They were evacuated to the south over the next few weeks. Most menacing of all was the wave of executions carried out by the SS on Himmler's orders. On January 23rd, with the Red Army now breaching the old frontiers of the Reich, several members of the German resistance linked to the July plot were put to death in Plötzensee prison. The victims included von Moltke, Bolz, and Planck. Goebbels' new slogan, "We shall win because we must win," provoked contempt and despair among non-Nazis, but the majority of Germans did not yet think to question it. Even though only fanatics now believed in final victory, most still held on because they could not imagine anything else. The strategy of Goebbels' relentless propaganda ever since the war in the East turned against Germany had been to undermine any notion of choice or any notion of an alternative. The population at large saw nothing of Hitler. He had disappeared from the newsreels, and they heard only Hitler's very last broadcast on January 30th, marking 12 years of Nazi government. His voice had lost all its strength and sounded completely different, It was hardly surprising that so many rumors circulated about his death or confinement. The Fuhrer's invisibility was due partly to his own withdrawal from public life and partly due to the difficulty of concealing the dramatic changes in his appearance. Staff officers visiting the Reich Chancellery, the bunker, who had not seen him since before July 20th bomb explosion, were shaken. "He was sometimes hunched over so much," said Guderian's aide, Freytag von Loringhoven, "that he almost had a hump. The once glittering eyes were dull, and the pale skin now had a gray tinge. He dragged his left leg behind him on entering the conference room, and his hand was limp. Hitler often held his left hand with his right hand in an attempt to conceal its trembling. Still, just short of his 56th birthday, the Fuhrer had the air and appearance of a senile old man. He had also lost his astonishing grasp of detail and statistics, with which he used to batter doubters into submission. And he no longer received any pleasure from playing officers against each other. Now he saw treason all around him."
And I don't know how much, I've read little bits here and there of what had happened to Hitler's body, but apparently all this just came out after the fall of the Soviet Union. And apparently that, even here in the book it says, in 1970, the Kremlin finally decided to dispose of the body in absolute secrecy. So they had it. They had it in Moscow or something.
Yeah, I think it was in a vault, wasn't it? Yeah. Remains like cranium, jawbone, teeth.
Yeah, his jaws kept so carefully in the red box by Revskaya during the victory celebration in Berlin had been retained by Smirsch and the NKVD. The NKVD kept the cranium. These remnants were recently rediscovered in the former Soviet archives. The rest of the body, which had been concealed beneath a Soviet army parade ground, was exhumed at night and burned. The ashes were flushed into the town sewage system.
Man.
Wow.
Buried under a Soviet parade ground.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the army marches on Hitler's remains.
Yes. Yeah. Seems fitting.
Nice.
But so the jaw and the cranium are still around somewhere? Is that kind of what?
No, then they were recremated, dug up, recremated, right, and flushed down the sewage system?
Yes, these remains were rediscovered, it said. Oh, so, okay, yeah, okay. The cranium and the jaw.
And this was all to prevent a shrine to
They found
Hitler.
Them in the archive, which I imagine is like the warehouse at the
Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
Actually, they say the red box.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I found a red box with a jawbone and cranium up in my attic.
Mm. Boy, I haven't been in your attic.
I wonder if that was...
And I'm glad.
Wait, did the NKVD hide it in my attic?
They may have.
When I wasn't
Because who would look there?
Not me.
Mr. Kleinschmidt.
But isn't that a great ending to the whole thing?
Yeah.
Remains marched on, dug up, cremated, flushed down the sewage system.
Yeah. So they say. There's plenty of room for conspiracy theorists. No, I don't think so.
I think there's too many witnesses to that now.
I don't know.
Although they were all Russians.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, is we don't... Right. They lie to their own people.
But these are the top secret records.
Well, we may never know for sure. Elvis, too.
Please, open that up now.
There's an episode of Night Gallery that shows that Hitler's still alive. He's in somebody's basement.
Wasn't his brain in like a glass case and chloride somewhere? And
that was Einstein.
Put it into a... Oh, they saved Hitler's brain.
Oh, yeah. There's a movie.
Yeah. That's like
okay, we'll do that for next time.
All right. Are we done with this epic
I would
show?
Say we're done with Fall of Berlin 1945 by Anthony Beaver.
A tragedy let's hope the world never sees again.
Yes. We can only hope. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll see you next time.
Thanks again. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Spine.
And Sprocket.